Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 52 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Coming to you on 95.1 FM, 1080 AM, KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. Streaming live on kymnradio.net. So if you're in the car, when you get home, open up a browser. You can find us right there waiting for you. I'm one of your co-hosts, Corey Butler.
And I'm the other half, Ira Carlson.
And even though we're a Southern Minnesota focus show, we're not in Southern Minnesota this week.
No, we picked up the end of our up north tour. We'd already visited Lake Superior, Bent Paddle, and Blacklist up in Duluth, and we ended our day at Hoops Brewing, talking to, of course, proprietor Dave Hoops, who was one of my favorite brewers, also one of those people that you, when he talks, you listen. So had a great time stopping and visiting with him. Had a major technical issue on site. We had a hard drive crash on our laptop, which made for a very nervous moment. But luckily enough, I had my stuff in my bag from when we had been at All Pints North, where we were able to record the interview off of a single mic and an iPhone. A little nerve-wracking because we were also recording in the brew house. So had that little bit of a, I hope this really sounds good. I hope the audio is going to be perfect and end up working out really well. So anyways, big thanks to Dave for putting up with the look of panic on my face as my laptop just starts making.
It's the usual look, though.
Yeah, right? I know, but
which is a little heightened in this situation.
Yeah.
I was always known otherwise.
Yeah, but I was still, you know, being the technical guy and seeing my laptop freeze up, and at the same time realizing that the previous four interviews were all on the same computer.
That's what had me nervous.
Yeah, a little bit nervous. So, anyways, we recovered from that, and so sat down, had a nice, good conversation with Dave, and look forward to having everyone hear that. But of course, then we got a couple of beers of the week brought to us by Firehouse Liquor, and of course, a style of the week brought to us by Andrew.
Yeah, it was really a privilege to go up to Duluth. I think a lot of people know Duluth has become this brewing mecca, this regional hub, and beer tourism site for people to go. And the folks that we had on our show over the course of the last month and a half really showcased that well, I think. They kind of hit different areas, but they overlap. Lake Superior obviously has great heritage. Bent Paddle has blown up really big. Blacklist has done a lot of really cool things and has a cool approach with the European-centric styles and a really cool space. And they're in distribution and do things a little bit different with the Belgian-focused beer. And then there's Dave Hoops, who has, you know, been around 20 plus years and has a lot of heritage there and has done a lot for Minnesota brewing. And as you'll hear in the interview, I think it's important to listen to what Dave says and have respect not only for him as a person, but the ilk that he comes from, the Mark Stutroods, Dave's brother Mike Hoops at Town Hall Brewery, Shell's Brewing, those who have really set the standard of what Minnesota brewing should be. And I think some look at them as traditionalists and maybe folks who aren't chasing all the recent trends because that's been so popular in the last 5 years, putting everything and anything in a beer and breaking from style. And that's not inherently wrong to have milkshake this or double or triple that. There's something for everyone. But I think it's important to pay respect to those who have been doing it really well for a long time and continue to do it really well and are still building good beer for the future. And when we talk about traditional brewing, not just in terms of style, but also classically trained and having respect for the not just centuries, but millennia of heritage that's gone into this craft. So really cool interview, probably one of my favorite that we've done. I read Dave's column often when he runs it in the Duluth News Tribune. Just a wealth of knowledge from that guy. And just having him in Minnesota, I don't think people, you know, back when we only had 5 or 10 options in the state, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to Duluth, I'm going to go to Fitker's. That was a cool thing to do because we didn't really have a lot of options. But he was also doing something really good up there. So I don't think people necessarily realize that. And then as more breweries open and we have tap rooms now and everyone's got a brewery within 15 miles of them, I hope people are encouraged to go visit some of these places that have been putting beer out for a long time. And of course, now Dave isn't at Fitker's anymore. He's doing his own thing on Canal Park. But it's an extension of who he is. And we talk about recipe development. And it was very important for him when he started his own brewery and his namesake to do everything different, something new. Nothing that he did at Fitker's carried over. And I think that was important for him as a brewer to challenge himself, but also to make his own mark. And, you know, as we talk about in the interview, it takes some balls to put your name on the sign, right? Some would say it's egotistical, but he says it's a business decision. But also, if you're going to put your name out there, put your name out there. So I have a lot of respect for him. I think this is one of the better interviews in spite of our tech issues and in spite of being the last interview of the day and us having a long day, leaving Northfield in the morning, get up there and working our way through town and having lots of conversations. I think it turned out pretty well. So hopefully everyone enjoys it as much as we enjoyed having that conversation.
Yeah, Dave is such a great ambassador for the industry, you know, and then of course his brewery is my, you know, my favorite one being up there, but all four really just top notch, great use of, I mean, people living in Duluth have got it made with, for the fact that you can get to all these great places within minutes. You know, you're not driving across country. You're not, you know, stuck in rush hour traffic.
And you can Uber around like we did.
Yeah. Yeah. You can use Uber and Lyft and, have random weird conversations about, movies and everything else as you're driving around. So, but no, a lot of fun. Really thankful that Dave was able to give us the time. I mean, we had a blast talking to him at All Points North when he was severely, you know,
busy.
Busy. And we were probably low on the totem pole of people he wanted to talk to that day, but he took the time to talk to us anyway. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview.
Stick around. We've got a wonderful interview waiting for you.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering coming out of Bend, Oregon, is the Schutz Brewery's Red Chair NWPA. It's a Northwest Pale Ale. It's their limited release. And it's definitely a pale ale. And yet on the bottle, it doesn't say what a Northwest Pale Ale is, so maybe I'm missing that style. But very much,
assuming the malt and or hop is from the Northwest. That's a big growing area.
Yeah, but it's definitely...
But we don't know.
Right. You know, it's definitely not your Northeast IPA. It's not a super cloudy, not a super, you know, that style. And it's not really a West Coast IPA. So I guess it's a newer style that I was unaware of, but I actually do like it. It's a really nice, the hop balance to this is really tasty. It's an easy drinking beer. You know, I make fun of it as I, you know, talk about the fact that it says Northwest IPA and doesn't tell us anything about it, but only 60 IBUs, 6.2%. They do bottle condition it. Just a really nice, solid, solid beer. Very easy to drink. I just wish I, you know, we don't know what a Northwest Pale Ale is right now because I haven't heard that name yet or message yet. So,
well, I think it's probably in the same vein as a Midwest IPA and things of that nature. I think in part because of the location, Northwest comes into play with that. But also, I pick up pine, a pretty strong presence.
Yeah, I definitely get the pine.
Which, when you think of Oregon, Washington, there's a lot of forest up there, Northern California. So I'm guessing they're playing on that a little bit. So I pick up that pine. There's a little bit of citrus in there, but definitely pine prominent for me.
It's pine, but not dank. It's a really nice pine flavor to it, but not a dankiness, if that's, you know, something you're opposed to.
Kind of brings me back to more of a traditional IPA, at least American IPA, where it's more closely balanced, but on the hop side a little bit more strength-wise.
Yeah.
In the pine capacity.
It is definitely not trying to hit me in the face with a certain flavor or style. So I definitely do like this one. I kid a little bit about the Northwest part, but I don't think they're going to hear me up there in Oregon. But you can get it at Firehouse. Definitely would.
And Deschutes, obviously a very well-known brand,
oh, yes.
National brand. They've put out a lot of good beers for a lot of years. This is a new one to me, and I'm glad that we have it courtesy of Firehouse.
Yep.
And then our second offering is Ambergeddon. Another play on words here. This is from Ale Asylum in Madison. We've had a few of their beers on the show at this point. This comes in at 6.8 ABV. And by the name Ambergeddon, you would guess it's an amber ale. And you'd be correct. So this has a pretty strong malt backbone, but, you know, the hop comes through a little bit and a nice hop aroma to it, actually.
I really pick up a big caramel flavor to this, especially in the first taste, but it almost blends into, even though it doesn't say it, a nut brown. There's kind of this nice, bold flavor to it that I really kind of do enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely malt forward, given it being an amber. There is the hop presence when you smell it. I don't get so much of the hop drinking it, but You know, amber's not my usual go-to style of beer. I don't think it is for most people, but I think for traditionalists, they really like the style. I think it's good that places are producing more classic styles, so this is an opportunity for people, especially with Ale Asylum, because they're known for doing a lot of big IPAs and kind of some funky stuff. So it's nice that they're doing more of a traditional style. And with a name like that, I think people will probably pick it up just for that alone. So a good representation of the style, I'd say. And it's good for being an amber. And that probably sounds like a backhanded compliment, but ambers aren't just something I seek out typically. But this is well done for that style.
Actually, I would say to seek this out because I actually like this one. It caught me on the first sip where there's just enough interesting flavors going on. But again, nothing too, you know, it all balances well together. Again, I pick up, you know, and part of that's the amber, but I pick up a carameliness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a hint of a nuttiness, which, you know, maybe, you know, a hopper in there that's doing that. But I definitely like this one. But if you want to try either of these beers and make up your own decision, because both these beers kind of threw us for a little bit of a loop today, so it's kind of fun. Thanks to Sean for Firehouse Liquor to sending those over. But if you want to try either one of those, they're readily available at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. Here we are at stop number 4 of our big Duluth North Shore trip. Have the pleasure of coming to you from the brew house of all places at Hoops Brewing. I think this is probably our first interview that we've done in an actual brew house, if I recall correctly. And it's a beautiful space. We've got the lights set down low. We've got the green lights going. There's a good crowd out front for a UMD and the UND game going on here shortly. And we're sitting here with proprietor Dave Hoops. Dave, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
It's great. You know, chilly. You guys have had a long, busy day, but yeah, we're looking forward to, it's kind of funny that the lights are green in here because that's the Sioux colors, but we usually keep them green, so it's all good.
I do see a number of North Dakota jerseys out there, so maybe they thought you were in kind with them with the green colors, but I'm sure that's not the case. We've got Bentleyville going on this weekend as well. Obviously, we're recording this well ahead of the air dates. We were joking on a prior show that we had come into Duluth about 10:15, 10:30, no wind, clear, just a nice day. We stopped in Quick Trip to get a Gatorade or two and use the restroom. We walked out, and it's snowing and the wind's blowing, and but that's Duluth on the North Shore in December, right?
Yeah, it's actually really nice out, honestly, for sure.
Well, it's nice in here, and we're sitting down to sample a couple beers, but obviously we're here to have a great conversation with you. We were fortunate enough to have you join us this summer when we did our All Pints North show, and we wanted to come back and do Duluth for the big winter tour that we do to get ahead of the winter season. As bad as it can be up here, it's also bad on the southern end of the state too, so we always concerned people getting to us or us getting the people throughout the winter for this show, so getting some of those shows out of the way. Hoops Brewing, obviously your namesake, you got a little background in brewing, I guess, around here, and we want to talk about you opening this brewery and your experience in Duluth specifically with the brewing industry. But boy, what a beautiful space, the brew hall. I mean, that was your vision. And I guess before we jump into that, we should say, obviously, we're in Duluth, but for those who haven't had the pleasure to join us here in the brew house, where can people find you?
We are in Canal Park in beautiful downtown Duluth, you know, just a block and a half from the High Bridge. We are in the Marine Iron Building, which is also houses Red Lobster, Old Chicago, and the Suites Hotel, as well as Bar Engineering and many condos and such. We're in the former Timber Lodge Steakhouse location at 325 South Lake Avenue, or Lake Avenue South. And we have a fairly large space that will house a number of people, and we really are going with the community-based beer hall feel and activities and such.
Yeah, if memory serves me, I think we're about 20 feet away from where I had some killer stuffed mushrooms once. So, had been down here a couple times with my wife, stayed upstairs. Beautiful space for people who aren't aware of it. Maybe they don't recall the name, but they're the ones with the hot tubs and the two-room places. So, it's kind of a unique building, an old factory, I believe, and kind of retrofitted. And obviously, you guys are adding a great element to that. I think we'll work a little bit backward here. Obviously, again, you've got quite the history here in brewing, specifically in the area. But a year and a half you've been open here with Hoops Brewery. Hoops Brewing, excuse me, in Canal Park. What led to that? I mean, that's a big decision to go off and on your own, become the owner, and then do it the way you're doing it. I think you're doing a lot of things that are unique here that pay respect to the industry, and maybe seem different to people, but actually pay respect to the way things were done before.
Well, I hope so. I had the wonderful start of my career in San Francisco at the Bay Area, and where people may or may not realize that craft beer was born with Anchor Steam and then New Albion in early 80s. And I had mentors that I got to work under that really started our industry. And so I did a decade out there and then moved here to Duluth. At that point, there were only a small handful of breweries in the state. So I enjoyed a long career at Fitker's Brewhouse. At that time, it was pretty easy to invent new styles of beer and put out new things because there were, and making sours and barrels and stuff was just everyday business. That's just beer we sold. It wasn't a fad. It wasn't a thing. It was what we did. And over the years, we developed, I don't know, a lot of good relationships, a lot of brewers, worked with a lot of people. And when I left the brewhouse, the former partner at the brewhouse, Tim Nelson, who now is the owner at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior, Wisconsin. He and I started a small consulting company called BevCraft, and the goal was to work with existing brewers and new breaking into the business brewers and help them either improve their breweries or build their breweries. During that time, I spent a lot of time on the road with a few places that was really interesting and fun. And Tim and I, we built a prototype for a production brewery, you know, virtual one. And my dream had always been a beer hall, especially because I personally feel like, you know, the market is fairly full. And the beer hall is something in Germany that every city has. And so we built those. And over time, while I was looking around, I stumbled on this space. To put it quickly, there's two fairly large corporate chains in here. And the landlords were not interested in another restaurant. They liked the idea of a local, community-based type outfit. I pitched them my idea, and the rest was history. That was 3 years ago, right now, the holidays. And I started working in here just after Christmas in 2015. Yeah, I guess so. I incorporated in October 2015, and we started working in here, and it was a year and a half of planning, fundraising, you know, demo, et cetera, until a year and a half later, we opened a year and a half ago. So
you're doing the stuff with BevCraft. You left Fitker's at that point. But what really drove you to say, okay, I'm ready to get back in, get my hands dirty, and then also be the person behind the entire operation and come here and open Hoops Brewing in Canal Park, especially at this size of scope, and then with that model of beer hall? Because we talk a lot about different models for businesses, distribution, small, big. You mean you could be small and have distribution, but this brew hall here is a sight to be seen if someone's not been here yet.
You know, that's a great question. I get that a lot. First and foremost, I think that Tim is a much better businessman and hence consultant than I am or was. It wasn't my most favorite, you know, rest of my life idea. You know, there's a lot of interesting people out there with interesting concepts to work with. But the real reason that we're sitting here is this space. I didn't really feel a huge need to open another brewery in this market. I wanted to be more of an ambassador, help out, do things. I didn't exactly know where that would fit. A little bit too old to, you know, go be a shift brewer somewhere or something. But if I could get in shape, I could do that. But I've always admired this building, and the former tenants did a lot to take the character out of it due to their concept of business, and they're a corporate outfit for a while until the places kind of started dropping down. And this building always blew me away. And when I told the landlords and the owners and we talked, the concept I had, they were blown away by it, but I also promised them a showcase, a place to really, really have this kind of an atmosphere. And so a lot of the reason I don't have any problem knowing that I can make good beer. I'm not a wizard brewer. I just have brewed for so long that you know how to brew. the more was, can we provide an experience in this space? And, you know, if I hadn't run into the space, I highly doubt that I would have, you know, rushed into Hoops Brewing, because the concept of the beer hall was so important to me. So that, you know, maybe the reason for the season, you're kind of looking at it as well as, you know, all these components that fit together.
So you talked about the experience of what Hoops Brewing is with this brew hall. What is that experience? I mean, how do you describe it when you're talking to somebody the first time? If they've not been here, what do you tell them? Hey, when you're coming here, this is what you should expect.
Well, I go a lot of different levels with that, but I like to use the C's: casual, convivial, community-based. I like to talk about comfortable, how warm and cozy it is in here, literally and figuratively. In the summer, it's nice and cool, but it's a warm feeling. Everybody tells me all the time the atmosphere in here is so inviting. And that's the thing. When you come in here, you're coming in here, you're hopefully you're off work, you're not working, you're trying to relax. You know, I'm not a sports bar, but I love sports. And so I made sure to be able to put a few TVs around that you can see if you want, but you don't, they're not in your face. We have lots of games. We've got ping pong. We've got community seating, or, you know, separate seating. We have a lot of locations we can have little gatherings and get-togethers. So the feeling in here is the old school: sit down with your friends or your family and have a pint and chat and talk about it. I'm in Canal Park, which makes me really fortunate because of all the food that's available and the fact that I'm not a major competitor. I did two things that are a little unique. I don't have a kitchen, so I sell all these other people's food. And that allows them to sell more. It also gives my patrons something to eat. And I also don't distribute very much at all. I'm in very limited distribution, so I'm really not competing really hard with my brothers and sisters that own the other breweries around here. So I'm kind of, you know, the vast majority of beer we make is sold right here. And then we try to have a really wide, wide range, you know, something for everybody, too many beers, blah, 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 25, 26 beers on tap. So it, and family friendly, everything friendly except dog, which in time I'll get that figured out when I get some outdoor seating. But we opened, we had cool dog rules right away. A kid and a dog got into it. It just didn't work out. So I get some flack for that, but I'm not dog unfriendly. We just have to get to that point.
I would go with the fact that you're actually almost underselling just what you did with this tap room, because I mean, I find this is one of the most beautiful tap rooms in the state, just for the fact that I love the big, I don't know what they are, 3 foot by 3 foot beams that run throughout the, you know, the space, the brickwork, the lighting and everything else. It's one of my favorite places to come when I get up here and stuff. And of course, that really nice long bar, and you may touch on it, but your unique relationship with the Ripple, right on the other side of the half wall and everything else. But I think you're underselling, I'm just going to jump in and say that, but underselling this tap room, because this is one of my favorite tap rooms to come to in the whole state. And so,
you know, I really appreciate that. You know, we were talking earlier, I've got plenty of ego, Hoops Brewing, but in general, we try to be humble around here, and we try to, you know, I promised my landlords I would make a beautiful place. I had a lot of help. Great architect. It's really fun when you do a project like this. My architect, my contractors, my mechanicals, my lawyers, they're all close friends of mine. I've all worked with them. I've worked with them for a long time, and that changes things as far as how things get done. So, the Ripple Bar is a really cool concept, and it's interesting because sometimes I think it's misled. There's been some comments and things that I'm gaming the system or something like that. That couldn't be further from the truth. First and foremost, I was pretty involved with the guild in writing these laws. And I called the state, you know, 3 years ago and talked to them about this. And they were really forthcoming. I've known these people, and they literally were like, we have to do this, 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 this. I mean, it's a ridiculous list of hoops you have to jump through, literally. So you guys, so yes, that we have a separate, I built this place, and then I built in a separate bar, which was sold to a separate individual. I have no ownership whatsoever. Then a separate address was listed. Then a separate license was put together. Then a separate lease was put together. And you cannot remove anything that you buy in that bar into Hoops. There's a adjoining door because we share a bathroom. And that's it. And we spend a lot of time and energy enforcing that rule, including, you guys can see all the signs, everything else. But the half wall is great, because we can sit across from each other and you can enjoy a glass of wine, a cider, a cocktail. And it, again, I don't make a penny off of it. I have, you know, that's those are the laws. But it really gives a different – it enhances the beer hall experience because let's say you don't like beer and you do, then you can drink boom, boom, right? So I appreciate that question.
Sounds like a creative solution to a problem the state has, and that's beyond this conversation, obviously, but you look at other states, that's not such an issue. This question may be a little more abstract, but – if my math serves me right, you've been brewing beer for around 35 plus years, give or take. I mean, I was going off the early 80s thing, so my quick math told me that, my Southern Cities math. How have you seen, and again, abstract talking here, how have you seen the industry change in those years? Obviously, the 90s brought a little momentum, the 2000s definitely, but the last 8 years have been like entirely different world, I'm sure, compared to the 20 years that preceded it. How have you seen approach to beer, but also how you brew beer and how you stay true to what you want to provide as beer? Because as we talked offline before we got going, like there's a lot going on in the brewing industry. Some of it good, some of it great, some of it maybe not so great, and some of it's subjective, right? But you clearly have an ethos you want to follow here with what you're doing, and you want to be true to yourself. How do you stay true to that, present something for everyone, when there's so much weird stuff, to put it mildly, out there, and then encapsulate that over your entire career? So unwrap that for me briefly.
I can do that. Starting with, of course, so, you know, in the late 80s and stuff, I was in the wine industry. So I've been in the booze industry forever, right? But in the 90s, beer exploded on the West Coast, and there was a mini explosion far different than this. And frankly, most of those breweries closed. So that came, that went. I watched that happen. But I also, you know, I opened a brewery called Pyramid in Berkeley that was an IPO offering, $26 million in 1995, right? And, well, that place went from 190,000 barrels nationwide to, by the time I left, to, you know, regional and half that much sales. So the market was changing. When I came to Minnesota, excuse me, as I mentioned, there weren't that many breweries here. And so it was easy to just start brewing the way I like to brew, which was, you know, kind of West Coast style, which I changed into North Shore style, which, you know, I left that at the brew house when, you know, that's their moniker now. But I left them hundreds and hundreds of recipes and hundreds of different beers. And over the time, I could evolve my brewing. Now, what happened, and to your question, is, you know, the explosion in the 2000s is what happened. Lake Superior existed here for many years and was doing a nice job. They weren't aggressively growing. You know, Ben Paddle came into the market with everything 100% solid, the four partners, the plans, the experience, the idea, and they just took off. And with them, and the beer hall changed, the taproom law. Thank you, Surly. I don't think Surly gets enough credit from brewers that exist here because of them. And I've said that in a lot of interviews, and it just kind of bums me out. You all should be thanking Surly. And that's a real big reason that all these breweries started going. Now, you guys and the media and everybody, it continues to tell us all that, you know, how great drinking beer is and how amazing it is. So people like to hear that, and they do that, right? So this is all evolving and getting more and more great. But then to your real question, ingredients, guys. The reason that we're having so much fun now and that there's so many great beers, because the ingredients have exploded as well as the breweries. Hops, first of all. Mosaic hops, Citra hops, Denali hops. None of these hops existed before. Now, traditional brewing like I like to brew hasn't changed very much, except I have a better brewery, I have better ingredients, and I can continue to experiment doing this and that. And so I'm not sure how many of your questions I just touched on there.
Well, the big question is, how do you stay true to yourself? Those ingredients have changed over time, but you've always had a flair for the beer you like and the beer you want to present. So in the ever-changing industry of ingredients and taste and consumers, how do you brew the beer you want to brew but also have beer that sells?
Okay, well, you know, that's a great question. If you're a production brewery, you don't. You make what sells, and you have some fun, and you market it. If you're me, you've got so many beers on tap that it doesn't make any difference. You can always make crazy one-off fun beers just for the people while you're still making beers that are true to yourself. The way I like to brew, and I've always said this, you know, Lake Superior water, I'm cheating completely. I have a huge advantage, number one. I tend to like to, you know, dry my beers out and make the finishing, make them quaffable, make you want more. I don't brew completely traditional. I use a ton of fruit. I make so many different fruit beers. I usually make year-round wheat beers, which is unusual. I barrel age a lot. I only make sours the traditional way. That's just my way. A lot of blending, stuff like that. But it's easy to be true to yourself when you don't have anybody you're answering to. I was very fortunate at the brew house. My owner, the owners were friends of mine, and they gave me, you know, pretty much free rein. And so for all those years, I made kind of whatever I wanted and, you know, ideally make the customer happy too, listen to them, play with a lot, make a pepper beer, which is undrinkable. And then, you know, but for 15 years, we sold it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's easy to be true to yourself if you can pour enough beer at your brewery to make everybody happy. I make an American lager that is essentially Coors Banquet. You know, I mean, you don't see a lot of, you know, craft breweries doing that. And why not? You know, there's enough room to be able to make whatever you want.
Well, I think that's an interesting point because in the 50-plus shows we've now done that we've talked to a lot of people about that so-called transition beer. And you said, screw it. Let's not do the transition beer. Let's just make the beer people want to drink if those are the drinks they want to have. So I find that somewhat enlightening that you actually did that. But again, you said you have 20-plus taps here, so you have the flexibility and authority to do that. So I appreciate that. So in 18 months you've been here, let's talk about a little bit about the beer that you've actually had on those 18 months. Tell me about the number of recipes you've done, how often you change them. Is it one and done? Are you having repeats? I know you have repeats, but are they mostly one and dones? What have you done in 18 months with your beer?
Well, first and foremost, as you know, we don't name our beers. And I get this question all the time. All I do is put a style on the beer. And for example, sometimes there's styles that don't exist. I'm pouring an IPC right now, which is an India Pale Cream, which is a 8% alcohol beer, which I fermented in half with lager yeast. Took 3 weeks, then the other half with ale yeast and hopped the crap out of it. It's an India Pale Cream Ale, right? That used to be easy to invent beers 20 years ago. Now we still kind of play with it, right? But as far as the beers, so we don't name them. We just put a number on them, and the number doesn't have anything to do with what batch it is. It has everything to do with personal stuff, my kids' hockey numbers, my daughter's numbers, personal numbers to me and my wife, dates. Our Christmas beer, our holiday beer is called 1225. So people like that. I think some people think it's kind of stupid, but I also like the fact that I don't have a bunch of stupid beer names, which, you know, it is. People are running out of names. So we start there, right? So how many batches have we done? Somewhere in the, I don't know, the 150, 160 batches. As far as repeats and such, we've kind of settled on a small group of beers that we brew full-time, a light ale, a stout, which is named number 88, by the way, after probably the greatest hockey player out there today, Mr. Brett Burns. Thanks, Minnesota Wild. He plays San Jose. Anyway, and then we a brown. Yeah, he does. And then we always keep one or two IPAs on by popular demand. One I call New School, 48 and 21. One is New School, one is Old School, and I always have to explain that. And then so we kind of keep like five or six beers on tap. We usually always have one or two fruit beers on. We have a different series. And then after that, we kind of make whatever we want, but we also listen to people. We just bought back our UK Pale by popular demand. We're bringing Pomegranate Wheat back next week, which is Melissa's beer. My ex-head brewer and invented that beer, Pomegranate Rye. It's amazing. And so we do that, but we just made a stock ale. When's the last time you guys had drank a stock ale? I mean, you weren't here in the 1700s, but if you remember when Sam Adams opened, they had two beers, right? Boston Lager and stock ale. You know, but the thing is, people are not unearthing old school beers that way. And I'm not doing anything special. It's just that I've read a lot of books and I've brewed for a long time, and so there's a lot of opportunity out there. So what are we doing with the beer? We're doing that. Well, we still make these hockey fans happy with, I've got a beer that's a Mexican lager that may as well be Dos Equis or Tecate. I mean, I'm not saying it's as good or clean as those beers. I'm just saying it's in that vein. So we just continue to do that in a way that makes the customer feel wanted and happy, but also I'm not pissing off all the serious beer drinkers that are in here. They are yelling at me about the kettle sours, but I'm sorry, I'll take that yelling, but they'll have sours soon enough.
So if I heard you correctly, when you left the brew house, all your recipes stayed there, so everything you're doing here currently is new stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. I have personal feelings that any brewer that just rips themselves off, that's wrong. Those recipes, yes, they're in my head intellectual property, but the owner of the place owns them. And I'm not making any of the same beers. I don't have the same system. I don't have the same ingredients. But I certainly have brothers and sisters and cousins that did these recipes. And funnily enough, a few months ago, the owner of the brew house talked to me, and he wanted to go retro and bring back a bunch of my recipes. Well, that flattered me. That's great, right? But I see those as like my children from my – I mean, thankfully, I've only had one family, but, you know, my first family, right? But, yeah, I had the same wife for 30 years, by the way. Yeah. But, no, we didn't do that. Like, I specifically don't make an apricot wheat, which I've been asked to hundreds of times because that was a very popular beer, which I brought from Pyramid Brewery in California to the brew house. I won't do that. I think that's just my personal code of ethics. But I make a peach and pear wheat, for example. I mix pear and peach together. Tastes awesome. So, no, we don't copy that stuff, but I'm making Imperial Stout right now, different recipe than I made at the brew house, but yeah, I mean, you got to have your pedigree, like how you got where you got, you know?
No, I appreciate that, and this is kind of a tangent, but we were talking about plagiarism in my office the other day in terms of, I manage a magazine, trade magazine, and people who write for us often write for other people, and the idea that they could plagiarize themselves. So I was educating some people about the idea of the plagiarize themselves, which is essentially what you said. Like, you got, you know, you may have been the creator of it, but someone else owns that intellectual property because you were working for them at that time. And while you probably could get away with it, you're still plagiarizing yourself, and it's not worth it. So, and you say, why do it? And my question is, 18 months on, 150 new recipes, you talk a lot about reading and being well-versed in this. Clearly, you've done it for a long time. I think to our listeners, they think of, well, how the hell do you come up with 150 recipes in 18 months? How do you come up with 10 recipes? Where's the influence come from a lot of these ideas? Is it the people you're working from? Is it your own knowledge? Is it you see things elsewhere? Like, where did all these recipes come from?
You know, considering you didn't make a long list of questions, these are killer questions. That's a really good question. I get this question a lot. Well, first and foremost, I think any brewer with a decent amount of experience isn't going to have a lot of trouble coming up with recipes and ideas. But for years and years, my whole career, I've admired other beers and I've emulated them. My favorite beer in the world is called Herren Pils from a brewery called Kiesmann in Bamberg, Germany. So I've made my version. One of my other favorites is called Edelstoff from Augustiner Brewery. So I've gone out there and done my research and looked at that beer and then made my own versions. And this goes on and on and on, hundreds of beers. And, you know, if imitation is flattery, then that's, you know, and I in turn have made a lot of beers like Hopaluia at the brew house, which were emulated by brewers like Surly and Indeed and other places that will happily say they were influenced by those beers. And that's how we are with each other. I don't think, you know, sometimes I'll just make a totally random new beer like that IPC doesn't really make any sense to make. It's expensive, took forever. It's really weird and unique. Fine. People are enjoying it. But in general, I take inspiration from beers I like, number one, flavors. It's really, you know, I spend a lot of time looking at empty glasses and thinking what it should look like full. Color, flavors, different nuances, and then, hey, boom, all of a sudden you make UK Pale Ale, which, as you both know, UK Pale Ale doesn't exist. That would be a little bitter. Well, people don't love the name bitter. So I make a little tiny, chocolatey, marshmallowy, tasty little beer and call it UK Pale Ale. And so, you know, we do things like that. I also get a lot of inspiration from, you know, my friends out west. Still, I sometimes get flack because I don't only push local beer and Minnesota beer. I came from California where there's amazing stuff being done, and I still talk with these people and work with these people. And the person who invented Brewed IPA is a buddy of mine out there, right? So I talk to him, and he tells me the recipe. So when I make my Champagne IPA, I'm going to have a nice reference point to build off of. So I think we help each other a lot. We have all these cool ingredients that make it really hard to make a bad beer. And then it's your creativity. It's no different than making casseroles or hot dish or whatever. You just decide what you want to do and what you can get away with. I'm not going to tell you I don't dump beer. You know, like if it just doesn't work or if it's not what I want, out of here.
So one beer I want to talk about is the one I'm sipping on here. Any listener of our show knows I adore pepper beers. They're sometimes hard to find in the state. And when you get them from elsewhere, it's hit or miss. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not good. Sometimes they're burning your mouth. Sometimes they're really subtle. You've got a really nice offering here. I'm curious about this recipe, like the peppers and what's gone into it. And I follow you on social a little bit, so I know when new things come up. But remind us if this is a new recipe, if there's something that's been on before, and what people can expect, because it's nice burst. I think I described you as like a lot of the pepper beers you get, just it's like a solid burn where it carries throughout from the front to back, or it builds up. Whereas this one, I kind of felt like prickles on my tongue. Like it was a different experience, and I really enjoyed it, but not too hot. And you know, of all the 24, 26 beers you have on tap right now, this is the one I'm having now. And I picked it for a reason, and I enjoy it. So tell us a little bit more about that one.
I love pepper beers, and I'm pretty sure I have the distinction of when I came to Minnesota, I was one of the first to start making them besides the St. Croix, Todd Fighton down there. And I also brought wheat wine to Minnesota, which was straight out of Sacramento from the Rubicon Brewery. And so I've been making those two beers since day one. Well, when I came to the brew house, I might have made a beer called Wildfire, which I like to tell people it was by far the most selfish beer I ever made, you know, because it was ridiculous. It was a 9 out of 10 on the heat scale. I just was trying to be funny. I love that kind of thing. Well, it caught on. It was on tap full time for 15 years, right? So when I came here, I'm going to continue to make pepper beers. And I do make them from, well, 4 is the lowest level of heat I've gone with, up to 9. And we do a lot of it. We do a lot with pineapple, mango, and peppers. We mix different ones. We do, you know, standalones. This is a standalone beer. And I have used the same pepper supplier for my entire career. And I use my base chilies are always from Hatch, New Mexico, which is a famous chili growing area. And they have different levels. They have trade names like Big Jim and stuff like that. But they really go mild to extra hot. And I always have I have a large amount of those. And then I augment. In this case, I used 4 different Hatch chilies, also jalapenos, serranos, and habaneros. And my goal there was when you smelled it, that you would smell like the pepper patch, like the garden, right? And that the fruit, being the pepper, would actually be a part of the flavor of the character of the beer as opposed to only heat. Now, the heat is about a 4 for me, but it's a creeper. It's not that much, but you're drinking an enjoyable, really light-based beer that just highlights peppers. And I will always make pepper beer. It's just something I do that I love to do, and I like the fact that there's a lot more people that like it than I expected.
Well, I was going to say, I was waiting to try to get set up with equipment, and Corey comes up with his beer, and he goes, do you get a beer yet? I'm like, no, I'm waiting to get the equipment set up. And he goes, here, do you want to try this beer? I'm like, sure. He didn't tell me it was a pepper beer. Caught me by, it was a big bite at the beginning, but I definitely liked it. I mean, Corey and I do share a love of good pepper beer, so it wasn't that I was opposed to it, but it was still like one of those things where I was assuming he was going to hand me an IPA or something else, and there was a bit of a different flavor to it. And it's a big punch right up front, and I liked it.
Yeah, like I said, I love pepper beer, so the more you can do, the better. You know, I wish you were closer than 3 hours from us, but you know, I get here when I can get here.
There's a reason I end up always bringing up Hoops when I talk about Duluth, because it is definitely my favorite destination just because of so many different levels of all the beers that I can have here, and obviously ambiance, as I talked about earlier, but it's definitely my destination, my first stop, and then after that I'll branch out, but this is where I like to start out.
So I'm curious, of the 150 recipes you've done in 18 months, all new recipes, what has stood out to you? I mean, obviously you've got your mainstays, and maybe that's just because that's what the market bears. But of your taste, your flavor, are there a couple that just stood out to you that you've done in the 18 months, either from you or your crew?
Yeah, that's a good question. Everybody that knows me, you know, there's like I constantly rail on like the shaker pint glass, for example, that I think it's so terrible for beer. Now, that doesn't mean I'm criticizing others, but we only pour 20-ounce Nonics, and we have all these different beer glasses, right? The same thing goes for the reason for what I'm saying is that I'm a true believer in pale ale. And I've even gone so far as to write a few articles that I think that pale ale has gotten terribly overshadowed by IPAs over the last few years. And that's okay. I understand people love flavor and everything else. But so I made our pale ale kind of be my flagship number one, you know. I really put a lot of energy into that number 15 it is. That's my boy's hockey number. That's where that got that name, when he was a youth hockey player. And so I'm proud of that beer, and I tend to see a lot of people drinking, especially our regulars. I really, really like making lager beer. And this brewery, it's been hard to make full-time lager beer until I expand more, but I made a beer called Munich Lager that was great. Next, I'm going to be making Bamberg Lager, which will have some of those, you know, those attributes like I was talking about. Our cherry beer, I really like because I kind of made a famous cherry beer at the brewhouse, which they still make, but I totally changed the recipes and everything around. I make now a base, which tastes like a pie crust, and then I shove a bunch of cherries in it, and I call that 1225 cherry ale. But I've also found, I've shoved a lot of other fruit into that base with that pie crust beer and made the strawberry version and all this other stuff, and it's really been well. So I've done something new here where I've developed a couple different base recipes that I like to use, and then I can tailor them into different things, which is totally new concept, and I never did that anything like that at the brew house. And so I really enjoy doing that. I think my favorite beer here might be our stout, especially on nitrogen. It's truly a beer I like a lot, and I'm going to give you a secret here. Everybody wants to say it's an oatmeal stout, this and that. It's not an oatmeal stout. It's actually, honestly, full of wheat. I don't bill it that way. I don't bill a lot of my stuff that way. But I mean, I could go on and on. They're all, you know, my people, my children, my, you know. But and then, like I mentioned, Melissa's pomegranate beer was just a brilliant, you know, that's the first beer that we're, you know, making since she's left that was hers. So that's kind of a little homage there. And then I also like, you know, the pepper beers, as we, and the, of course, the year-round wheat beers, only Utapils, as far as I know, and Shells, of course, is they're doing a beautiful job, but it's hard to find a Minnesota-made wheat beer whenever you want.
You humbly spoke of your ambassador role for beer in Minnesota. You do the column for the Duluth News Tribune. You spoke of speaking at UMD for a couple guest lectures. When people think of brewing pillars, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, it's usually one or the other of the Hoops brothers. You've got a legacy in the state. I don't want to say it's important to you, but how do you position that to continue the growth of the industry, growth of love for beer, and get someone to buy into what you're doing, not only you specifically, but for others as well, because it's clearly very important to you. And as a fan of your column, again, you know, we talked about this at Ben Paddle about the fanboyism stuff. Like, I read your column every time it gets posted because, you know, even though I live in Northville, I follow the Duluth News Tribune on Twitter because I want to see what's going on in Duluth because I have an interest in Duluth. So every time I see your little mugshot pop up, I'm like, oh, gonna click on that. So appreciate you sharing your knowledge with the average person.
Well, thank you for that. I do. It's you know, it's a self given title here. Nobody made me anything, but I really believe. Yeah, I really believe that as a brewer, it's really necessary to give back to the industry that has done so much for me. It's why I judge beer, for example, and I'm on a crusade to try to get more Minnesota veteran brewers to judge beer and stuff because it's a grueling job, but it's one of those things that I really, you know, take a lot of pride in doing. And it's the same thing with this ambassador thing. I don't really try very hard to push my brewery as much as I try to push our market and our industry here. I'm going to get plenty of love. It's already me. I mean, I am not naive there, but I it's more important to me. It's really about education. I really, really believe in educating the public. I like to call them civilians, beer drinkers, like on what a good beer should taste like. Number one, you know. Number two, you know, what a style of beer should be, you know, without being a style Nazi or anything. I think there's always a lot of room there. But telling people about what we do and why is like kind of my major goal here. Plus, as this industry is getting saturated with, you know, not always 100% quality beer, I think the consumer is going to determine who comes out of all this on top. And it's not a race or a competition, but it's all about having the best quality beer you can possibly have, and that's how most of us approach this. So I like to write and talk and promote. You know, I believe that it helps. You know, our town, the mayor a couple of years ago, you know, proclaimed us, you know, the beer capital of the state, and that was all fun and games and stuff. I think Duluth still has a ways to go, but we are making some really, really good beer up here, and we're going towards being a beer destination. We're on that path now. And so if I can help in that way, you know, what do you guys, you know, those that can't do teach? I mean, I'm on that train for sure, you know, as I age.
So as we wind down here, 18 months in the past, you've done 150 recipes. What do you see in the next 18 months? What do you see in the next 3-5 years in terms of beers, what you're doing here? I'm assuming you're very comfortable with the model you've chosen, and you want to make sure you've got people in here every day of the week, especially on a Saturday when there's a Dogs game, right? But what do you see in the future for Hoops Brewing?
You know, I see slow, measured growth. I was only going to go about 10 accounts a year with the limited distribution, and I've gone a little bit above that because I do panic in the winter when it's not as busy. But slow, measured growth, the ability to continue to pay down, you know, debt service while, you know, looking at expansion. We built expandability into this brewery, and you know, frankly, in order to really hit the Minneapolis market a little more, which I've gotten some really, really good requests from places I really respect, I just don't really have the beer. And so in order to, I number one, serve this space. Number two, serve Duluth. Number three, you know, really, frankly, honestly, I want to go up the shore. I mean, those people are underserved in some areas up there, and I like those folks and go up through Lutzen and stuff and just kind of slowly expand at a measured pace. And then continue to really have fun with the beers. When I left the brew house, I had 7 years worth of sour beers and things that I had a separate room for. And I have to build all that, my library of blendable beers, this and that, you know, being able to brew on a small scale. And I want Hoops to be a destination. You know, Surly, in my opinion, is the destination brewery. It's amazing what Omar and Todd, Miss Todd, what they've done, did. But I want up here to be a destination where, you know, it like when you in the old days when you came to Duluth, you went to the brew house. I would love it if people were talking about Hoops that way. And I've got a long way to go. I'm new. I mean, honestly, I have nothing but respect and love for what Ben Paddle's done. And that's where everybody wants to go. But I would like to be in that group and get there through the beer and through the experience. And that's going to take in 5 years. I hope I'm there, you know.
Well, I think you're doing a good job getting your way there. So maybe not 7 years out, but what do you see for beer for you in the next, you know, we're looking at later in February into the spring. Anything that people can look forward to when they come visit here and wait for the ice to thaw?
Yeah, we built a lagering cooler, which means as soon as the holidays are over, we'll start making lager beer and we'll be putting it away, you know, during the winter months so that we actually have beer to serve. And so we'll have a nice lineup of various lagers, which my entire career is going to be spent trying to make a truly special lager beer. Not that the other beers don't matter. They matter a ton. I mean, but that right there, number one. Number two, a lot more, oddball fruit beers, interesting wheat beers, and then continuing to make classic styles where people get, they come to Beer Fest and give me a hard time. Dude, that's a brown. You know, what the hell? Well, I'm sorry. I didn't put any peanut butter and jelly and maybe some oats and some extra oil or something, but no. Well, chest hair or beard hair, right? But, you know, just, you know, browns, Scottish, stouts, porters, making fun beers and making twists on them. You know, still, you know, doing it my way, which is, I get flack sometimes because I don't really brew traditionally, according to some people. That's totally okay with me. I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to do it our way. And that's, we'll just do a lot more of that. But also, you know, the people that are around me are going to continue to grow, and they're going to give me some other ideas. And so is the customer base and the people like you guys and whatever.
And lastly, if people want to keep up to date on what you've got going on here, both in terms of the brewery, the beer, and sometimes you do pop-up stuff with food, which is awesome. I'm sure for those dog fans in town for a Saturday game, they can come by and get some breakfast. Good place for people to follow you online.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got the usual Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all under Hoops Brewing. And then we have our www.hoopsbrewing.com. And they're all live. And generally, the website is pretty much updated with the beers that are on tap. And, you know, thanks, guys, because this is fun.
Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns, and continuing on our theme of strong British beer, we're here to talk about the style of the week, barley wine. Now, I know it's called barley wine, but it is a beer, and it's named that because of how strong it is. This is a beer north of 10% alcohol that is made from fantastic British malts. So this is a beer that showcases those malts. It is toasty and nutty and bready and certainly quite sweet from all that malt. Now, despite that, a barley wine can be usually pretty well hopped, and those hops are there just to balance that sweetness. And what's great about a barley wine is, like a good wine, it's good for aging. And as it ages, those hoppy bitterness will fade, making the beer sweeter and smoother over time. One of the fun things you can do with a barley wine is taste a newer one against an older one, and you can taste how the beer gets sweeter and mellower over time.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Dave Hoops with Hoops Brewing for sharing his time, his expertise, his knowledge. It was a busy Saturday night. UMD was playing, and it was a great place just to hang out in the brew house and hear about kind of really Minnesota's history with brewing and Dave's involvement in that over the last 20 years. And it was a great way to finish the four brewery visit, our second voyage, second annual voyage of one of these trips. And I couldn't think of a better place to finish. What about you, Ira?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was more... probably one of the most intriguing places we've recorded anything, you know, with one of the brewers where we're literally inside the brew house in the glass windows as everyone stares in at us. And
little ambiance, lights were dim, the green was nice and bright.
Yeah, and I was glad we overcame the little bit of technical difficulties that we talked about at the beginning of the show. But yeah, so we were able to overcome that and still get a good interview in with Dave. And so my favorite place to visit when I'm up north, and I was glad we got a little more of the behind the scenes of it as well.
Yeah, it was a great trip. So if you're just catching this show, the prior three shows were also Duluth area breweries. So go back and listen to those archived on our website. That's ontapnorfield.com. We talked to Lake Superior Brewing, Bent Paddle Brewing Company, and Blacklist Arsenals. All great places to go check out. And then, of course, today, Hoops Brewing. Four phenomenal places to check out. It's such a great brewing scene up there. There's other places we would have loved to give a little time. But there's only so many places you can go in one day that we're up there. So those are the four this year. Maybe next year, if we're still doing the show and we're still traveling, maybe we'll hit four more in Duluth. We'll have to see when that time comes. But ontapnorfield.com, great place to go see all our prior interviews, listen to all those interviews, that is, including the three that we just did from Duluth. We're also on your podcast platform of preference, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, iHeartRadio, all those big wigs. You can find all our shows, 50 strong at this point. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are good places to find what we're doing. Find photos and videos and upcoming guests. Just search for On Tap Norfield at all those places. We will be back in 2 weeks. That's 11 a.m. Saturday, February 16th, with Boathouse Brothers Brewing out of Prior Lake, one of the newer breweries in the state, definitely in southern Minnesota. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with them. Looking forward to talking to those guys. They've been open since, I think, last spring, maybe summer. I've been there a couple times, but it's going to be fun to actually stop in with you and enjoy some of their beer and have a conversation about how they came to be. So they'll be here 2 weeks on KYMN Radio 95, the 1 FM. Also elsewhere when you want to get it, kymnradio.net. We appreciate you giving us your ear for a little bit today. Have a good one. Cheers.
Cheers.